all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Wednesday morning, April 24th, 2024, it's 4/24/24 today. North News Radio, where you can call us or text us at 855-75-CIVIC. You're going to need that number because it is time to give away some Brewers tickets. And then we'll check out the forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Again, you have to be able to receive these tickets by email and use the tickets. I've got four available to Saturday's game against the Yankees. If you only want two, let us know. But otherwise, we got here four for you. We really appreciate it when you take the time to call us, to text us, to send us a message by commenting on Facebook. And regular listeners know that we have some, you know, frequent contributors out there who are practically part of the Civic Media family. There's Mark in Prairie du Sac. There's Lynn in Oconomowoc. Of course, there's our friend Tony in Hayward. For Brewers tickets, be the first to call and tell us, where's Rob located when he gives us the weather report each day around this time? I can't tell you the temperature there yet because that would give it away. So where is our weather spotter friend Rob located? In fact, I think I actually have a truncated message from him. There it is, where he says, good morning from wherever, where it's sunny and 27. Love Tom Petty songs. Love his early music as Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and how they play it at Lambeau Field. So, you know, be on the lookout for that. Brittany, don't give it away.
That's a good question. I like that.
I know.
It's can Rob call?
Yeah, can he?
He can, but that would look really untoward, Rob.
Untoward.
Don't call us from that unknown place where you live.
Yes.
Guess what? He just put it up on Facebook himself. So if you're watching our Facebook page, you can call in right now, 855-75-CIVIC. And if you can use four Brewers tickets this Saturday, you give us a call and tell us where Rob is located. All right. Brittany's located in our little tiny weather lab over there and is going to tell us what a gorgeous day we have in store and where we're going for the rest of the week, Brittany.
Oh, gosh. It's going to be a great day today. Beautiful skies. You can see the sun shining right through, and it's going to be that way all day today and tomorrow from a high pressure system that is parking itself right over Wisconsin and Lake Superior. So this means calm winds. Finally, the winds are going to ease through this afternoon and they're going to stay calm through tomorrow too. And temperatures, though, if you've noticed, they've taken a dip, right? Freeze warnings across a good portion of the state, northwestern parts, and then a freeze watch down into Milwaukee, Madison area, even the Dells. So temperatures are into the teens right now. I think it's actually 19 degrees into Tomahawk and also Phillips. So it's a bitter cold one, but we are going to warm up slightly to some temperatures that are just a little bit chillier than yesterday. We're going to climb to the upper 40s to low 50s today. And then tomorrow we'll spike back to the 60s. And we even have some 70s for the weekend, but it's going to be a drencher. Got a lot of storms and rain headed our way as soon as Friday. So enjoy the sunshine while we have it.
The sunshine and the lack of wind, at least for a little while.
Finally.
But there will still be, you know, some fire danger concerns around parts of the state, you know, so you got to be careful out there. Yeah. So far from what I've seen from Greg, we had one guest come in and they got it wrong.
They said Green Bay. That is incorrect. That is absolutely incorrect. But
I could give a tip maybe.
What's that?
I think I can give a tip. Like there's an ATV Jeep kind of off-road park in this town. Any off-roaders out there maybe
know? That's a terrible hint.
That takes us down to 800 places in Wisconsin. But yeah, I know there's probably a good one there.
Brittany, do you call your room there something like the weather? Like Pat called it the weather lab. But do you have
I didn't think it was big enough to call it a laboratory. So we went with lab.
You
called
it don't have a name for it.
Laboratory.
You should all come up with one.
Weather cave?
The weather cave. Dun, dun, dun.
The weather castle of the weather goddess DJ Flipmix.
The Wisconsin weather castle. Oh gosh, I can't say that 10 times fast.
Great. Now we need listener input on what to call Brittany's weather room.
because weather room is dull. We'll come up with something here. Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Right. Have a good day. Again, those Brewers tickets are still available. Where is Rob calling in from or writing in from every day to give us the temperature regularly on this show? If you can use some Brewers tickets this weekend, you give us a call at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. Coming up later this hour, Wisconsin school board elections took place earlier this month. So you'd think we'd be done hearing all about voucher school costs, right? No, because you know there are truckloads of cash being skimmed from our public schools and going to voucher schools, and that's a genuine issue in Wisconsin's legislative elections. We're going to have a couple of guests discussing the strategy of helping voters understand whether their legislators or candidates are helping or hurting their hometown public schools. So listen for that in our homeroom segment coming up in just a bit on this Wednesday, April 24th, which I didn't mention before, is National Administrative Professionals Day, formerly National Secretaries Day. So be extra nice to that person who actually gets stuff done and keeps your workplace running properly. It's National Guide Dog Day, National Scream Day. So, Greg, you have permission to scream at least once while you're there. Oh, that was it? Okay, you must have had it turned down. Okay, that's good. It's National Stationery Day, the paper, not the lack of physical activity. Oh. If anybody uses stationery anymore, I have some.
You strike me as a from the desk of Pat Kreitlow.
I do. I had, well, from my time in the legislature, yeah. I would write a lot of notes to folks.
That's fancy. That's
so
cool.
So, yeah, it's somewhere. It's on this stationery day. And it's National Pigs in a Blanket Day, which I guess is the little hot dogs inside of crescent rolls or any other variation thereof. Can't say I'm a, you know. I don't go out of my way to make them, but...
Yeah, and I don't go to parties, well, at all, but I don't go to parties where there's served. It's like, no. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we set our standards a little higher? What caviar or nothing?
Greg, no. I usually, No, I live in Wisconsin. We don't have pigs in the blanket. We just have mountains of, like, seven-layer salad and yeah. a Jell-O dish and a...
Of course.
Now I'm hungry.
I know. Look what you did to yourself. Darn it! on this National Pigs in a Blanket Day. The criminal trial of Donald Trump continued yesterday with testimony from the former publisher of the National Enquirer, who once upon a time was a Trump friend and ally. They've since had some kind of a falling out, and it's why David Pecker was willing to testify against the former president and continues to do so probably for the rest of this week about the scheme that they had to not just catch and kill stories like about alleged affairs and things like that, but also to put stories out there that made the other candidates in the 2016 Republican primary look bad. And I think of one, Ted Cruz, who Donald Trump had horribly insulted his wife, and he said next to nothing about it. And now we learn in court yesterday that National Enquirer story that somehow tied Ted Cruz's father to JFK assassin Lee Harvey Oswald was completely made up. What was the actual fake news done on behalf of Donald Trump? Ted Cruz was asked about this, and he said he did not want to talk about ancient history, which just makes you wonder, what do they have on Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham and some of these others, that, you know, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, you know, that they were at the front lines of saying, we can't have this guy. We're going down the tubes if we have this guy. But now they're with him and they're going right down the tubes. And they, along the way, continue to echo Trump's claims of, you know, fake news, when the actual fake news was what was being done on behalf of Donald Trump. In our last hour, we heard a little bit from Senate candidate Eric Hovde, and he talked about the divisions that are out there in politics, divisions that he accuses Democrats of exacerbating, when the record is pretty clear who's doing the dividing when it comes to things like, you know, gender and race and socioeconomic status and all of that. And it reminded me of another note that I saw on social media yesterday. And it was about Congressman Derek Van Orden and something that he had to say about the president's ongoing efforts to forgive student loan debt, especially the interest, not the principal, but the interest that continues to get racked up and yet does not do anything to promote economic growth. Well, Derek Van Orden put up a post yesterday that said about student loan forgiveness, Joe Biden just made every plumber, pipe fitter, welder, electrician, CNA, LPN, convenience store worker, fast food worker, along with just about every other hospitality worker or construction worker, pay off these guys' $250,000 student debt so he can go find himself in India. So again, when we talk about who's actually stoking division based on socioeconomic conditions, that's what you see in a tweet like this from Derek Van Orden. He's trying to get all of these blue-collar people to suddenly feel resentment about the Biden effort to help more working families in different ways. This is one of many ways that the administration is trying to actually help the middle class. But here's what Congressman Van Orden is missing in this. Those plumbers, pipe fitters, welders, electricians, CNAs, convenience store workers, fast food workers, do you know what many of them have? Children who want to go to college. And they want their kids to go to college. They want their kids to have a shot at a higher income, at a more comfortable life, without being weighed down by literally decades of student loan debt. It was Derek Van Orden's Republican predecessors who worked so hard to denigrate higher education and to make a college education unaffordable, and now complain when somebody's coming along and trying to say, hey, we can get an education and not stay in debt throughout all of our adult lives just by taking care of the interest, not the principal that they actually paid and have paid back since then. Somebody's working toward actual solutions. But when it comes to stoking divisions, this is what we see from Derek Van Orden and Eric Hovde. And all I would ask is, what are you going to do? Instead of all this negative talk, this is what Democrats do. What are you proposing? That's what I want to hear about. And we'll tell you what some other candidates for Derek Van Orden's seat are going to be talking about tonight, right here on some Civic Media radio stations. Next, you're up north. Again, it was on this day in 1989, Tom Petty's first album as a solo artist, Full Moon Fever, that had this song, I Won't Back Down, and Free Falling, all among them. So we talked for a bit about Derek Van Orden's latest effort to divide folks by socioeconomic class, again, by wanting to block ways that the Biden administration is looking to improve the economies of local households who did the work to go get a higher education. There are more things that the Biden administration is doing that we're going to talk about. But first, before we leave Derek Van Orden entirely, I want to let you know that coming up this evening on at least three civic media radio stations, there is going to be a candidate forum. And it will feature the three Democrats who would like to challenge Derek Van Orden in November. They are Rebecca Cook, State Representative Katrina Shanklin, and Eric Wilson. They are going to be holding several forums around the sprawling 3rd Congressional District, one in April, coming up tonight, one in May, one in June, one in July. The one tonight at 6:30 is at the theater at UW-Stevens Point. And if you can't attend, you can hear it on three civic media stations, the Eagle in La Crosse, locally grown radio WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, and 93.5 The Tap here in beautiful Chippewa Falls. So give a listen there or listen through the app as well. and see if one of these candidates becomes your choice to vote for in the August 13th Democratic primary in the 3rd District. The winner of that August primary will then go on to challenge Derek Van Orden. One more reminder, if you want to call in and tell us where is Rob, who gives us a daily weather check a little after 7 o'clock, if you've got that hometown at 855-75-CIVIC, you can win 4 Brewers tickets to Saturday's game against the Yankees. If we don't get a winner in the next 7 minutes here before the next commercial break, we'll try again tomorrow with a different question. And if we don't give them away then, we'll send them on to another show, and they'll have that many more tickets to give away. So don't let these tickets get away. 855-75-CIVIC to learn more. All right, I mentioned how the Biden administration has been working on student loan debt, but that's not the only way that the administration has been trying to look out for more of the middle class, more for workers than for millionaires and billionaires. And there were two different headlines that underscored that in very big ways. First off, the rules are going to be changing for overtime pay. The current threshold for overtime pay, you know, time and a half after your 40-hour work week, is $35,568. So if you're making more than that, you're not getting overtime because, you know, there are folks in the government that say, well, you're fine. If you're making more than $36,000, you know, you don't have to get paid time and a half. Well, there's a whole lot of people making, say, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 who would disagree with that, who believe they should be owed overtime if they're going over and above their 40-hour work week. And the Biden administration is saying, yeah, we agree. So this July, that threshold will rise to $43,888, so just about $44,000. And then next January, it'll jump to nearly $59,000. The acting U.S. Secretary of Labor, Julie Hsu, said in a statement that the new rule from the administration would, quote, restore the promise to workers that if you work more than 40 hours in a week, you should be paid more for that time. Too often, lower paid salaried workers are doing the same job as their hourly counterparts, but are spending more time away from their families for no additional pay, and that is unacceptable. Then, just on the heels of that, comes a vote by the Federal Trade Commission. The FTC voted 3-2 yesterday to go along with the Biden administration wanting to sharply reduce the amount of non-compete agreements that far too many employees have to sign and are keeping them in bad jobs, keeping them from taking better jobs. The FTC voted 3-2 to actually go a lot further and to ban nearly all non-compete agreements that are preventing about 30 million people from working for competitors or starting competing businesses after they leave a job, ranging from fast food workers up to CEOs. The FTC estimates that 18% of the American workforce is covered by non-compete agreements. And I think we can all agree there are definitely some places where a non-compete agreement is useful and necessary. But I think a lot of us also agree that the non-compete has been used, abused, stretched way too thin as not so much a way to protect trade secrets, but as a way to address the labor shortage and to essentially keep workers trapped. So a couple of different headlines coming out of the Bush or the Biden administration yesterday on helping workers. Mr. Bach, it appears we have somebody who's going to be using some tickets for the Brewers game because we have somebody that knows Rob's hometown. Greg, who is our winner?
Our winner is Justin from Wisconsin Rapids.
Okay.
And he is going to be taking all 4 tickets. Justin, are you there?
I am here.
Justin, where is Rob from?
Rob is from Tigerton.
There we go.
Oh, my gosh. I believe that was an official.
Wait, you're calling him an old man?
That's I'm calling him
bell.
A winner.
It's an old man bell.
It's a winner ding.
All right, it works. Thank you so much, Justin. You're going to use all four tickets from Wisconsin Rapids to go to the game on Saturday?
Yeah, sounds great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Make sure Greg gets your info, and you have a great day here. Appreciate it so much.
Yeah, stay on line, Justin.
While Greg gets that info, now we can tell you that Rob says good morning from Tigerton. It is sunny and 27 degrees. He says he loves the Tom Petty songs, loved his early music, his Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
From Civic
and the song Waiting, a song you hear at Lambeau Field during a Packer game during the official review of a play. So good on Justin for winning that. And Rob, thank you so much for your input as well. Pam Yonke is going to have the Midwest Farm Report coming up in just a minute or two here. And then our homeroom segment is coming up next, our weekly look at education, especially public education, and you know the ways that it is being helped or hurt by some of our leaders in the state. We are going to be talking to a couple of folks, Jody Perrins and Denise Gomer Hutchison, more about letting the public know the true cost of voucher schools. Because once upon a time, the voucher school program was small and experimental, something just to try in the city of Milwaukee. My, oh my, has that Frankenstein's monster grown to the point where it is swallowing up truckloads of cash that should be going to our hometown community schools, and it's not. Yes, that has come up in school board races, but a growing number of education advocates are going to make it a legislative issue too, because a lot of legislators, and it's documented the amount of dollars legislators voted to move out of their district, move out of schools in their district to support private, often religious schools outside of their district. We'll have that coming up in our homeroom segment. That's up next here up north. Rub my eyes. All right, time for Homeroom, our weekly look at education, which has its own fan club. There's Chris Hambuck Boyle now on Facebook, wishing everyone a good morning on behalf of the Wisconsin Public Education Network and education advocates all around the state who join us on a weekly basis. Some of them are regulars. Some of them are first-timers. We're very grateful to all of them. They include a return visit by Denise Gomer Hutchison from the Wisconsin Public Education Network and Jody Perrins from the Algoma area, Kewaunee County, who's going to talk about something called the Tri-County Influence Campaign and what that has to do with education. And somewhere in the midst of all this education talk, we're also going to fact check Ron Johnson, who said some things during a high school visit earlier this week that need to be addressed. Denise, Jody, good morning. Thank you for being here today.
Morning.
So nice to have you along. Now, there's something that I said a lot in the run-up to the April elections, which included nearly 100 school referendum questions. And that was, if you're frustrated with all the referendums, don't take it out on the school districts in April. Take it out on people in November who actually favor, you know, starving public schools of their resources, painting them as bad, and supporting, you know, money going toward private voucher schools. And I think a lot of people thought, well, that's going to be the end of that. But no, now with these folks running for re-election to the legislature or running, you know, for the first time for it, the cost of voucher schools is a very much a genuine concern that should be shared with voters, Denise. Is that basically the premise of education advocates around the state now?
It sure is, Pat. We have to really say to people, the state of Wisconsin is choosing not to fund public schools like they need to and they should. And it's up to local voters. And local voters have told us that they love their public schools and they want them to be funded and they want them to be taken care of. And it's just this mixed message that they think that they don't have to because their taxes are paying these. And that's why we created our voucher transparency information so that every single school district in the state understands how much money is going out of their pockets, what they think to public schools, but is now being funneled to private schools through the voucher program.
So, Jody, you're coming at this from kind of a larger perspective, not just from the standpoint of education, but all kinds of messaging to convey to voters, much like our friends from Motherhood for Good, who come on every couple of weeks and talk about, you know, how they're communicating to your neighbors about the issues. And this is no longer something that's just done by, say, each little county party, whether it's the Chippewa County Democratic Party or the Clark County Republican Party. You now see that this is going across entire like legislative districts, for example. So tell me a bit more about the Tri-County Influence Campaign and what you're doing in Brown, Kewaunee, and Door counties.
Sure. Thanks, Pat. And I think that, you know, what Denise said is spot on about this whole issue about it being something that voters really care about and young families really care about. And when we started this Tri-County Influence Campaign, it really began as a grassroots effort in 2022 because we were trying to fill this void of progressive messaging in the rural areas, particularly. Madison just wasn't getting up here enough, and we were hearing a lot of, as Denise mentioned, misinformation or disinformation, and we needed to fill that void. So we pulled together about a dozen activists, campaign veterans, county party leaders, communications professionals, and we came up with this slogan, "Vote for Democrats, they vote for us." And the plan was to put up three billboards in our three counties and then complement that with a social media campaign to actually provide the data behind our claim that Democrats actually do vote for the rural voters. And education was one of the major issues for young families across the state. And so as we started kind of getting into some more of the details, we found this issue with vouchers. And here in Kewaunee County, for example, public schools lost $1.1 million to the private schools in our little small county. And so that became a big issue. And we really kind of delved into that a little bit more and found out really that over the course of the last 10 years, as Denise mentioned, the GOP-led legislature has really been draining public schools and really been taking money out of our taxpayers' pockets.
And so, the work that you're doing is a bit more, shall we say, political than what the Wisconsin Public Education Network is doing, which is decidedly nonpartisan. But what we've seen so much, primarily on the conservative side of the aisle, is groups, let's just pick on Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce for a second. And they'll say, hey, we're non-political. We're not affiliated with the Republican Party, but they sure share a lot of messages. And it just seems to me, Denise, that it is long past time for groups who are not overtly partisan to continue to spread their message and in ways that maybe other groups will also help get the word out to voters about the issue that you think should be most important in the voters' minds.
Totally, Pat, because here's the situation, is our public schools are generating workers for the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. And so why would they want to hurt public schools? Because when they advocate for taking money away from public schools, that's exactly what they're doing. They're hurting the ability of our public schools to be able to meet the needs of kids every single day.
And yet, for all that is already being learned about the real taxpayer cost of the voucher program, we end up getting comments like from Senator Ron Johnson, who was at Dodgeland High School day before yesterday, and the students there. He met with students, and a couple of the students really pressed him on voucher schools, and they expressed their disappointment that he would be supportive of voucher schools. And he gave the usual answer about, you know, competition is good, because again, he mistakenly believes government should be run like a business. But then went on to say that, you know, the voucher schools get, you know, less than they get less money, and that they're not taking money away from public schools. And Denise, we know he's wrong on both counts.
Yes, it's very disappointing and disheartening that this is what he said, because we've been in his office in D.C. We've given him the information. We've told him that 80% of children that are in voucher schools across the state of Wisconsin have never set foot in a public school. You know, we've shown him the numbers of what happened in this last budget in the state of Wisconsin, where funds that were should have gone to public schools are being diverted at a higher level per child, not totally because of the huge disparity in numbers, because, you know, we have a lot more children in public schools than we do in private, but those kids in private schools are being funded now at a higher level than our kids in most of our public schools.
And as that cash is essentially skimmed off the top and sent out of the district or to other schools, it leads to something, Jody, that we saw, especially 3 weeks ago, the growing number of referendums based on just operational costs. Nothing new or fancy, just to keep the lights on and the doors open. What was it like up there in the Tri-County area this year?
Yeah, so in Kewaunee County, two of our three school districts had to go referendum. And in Algoma, it was to fix 90-year-old leaky plumbing and put a leaky roof back together on the elementary school. And I must say that school district did a superb job of getting ahead of the issues with the voters, the referendum passed with a 2-1 vote. At our Luxembourg Casco school district, they also, it was operational needs. It was actually to pay staff and faculty. So these aren't like building a new field house or, you know, doing something over the top. And it's the same way, you know, you can look it up and it's, you know, North Lakeland, Hamilton, Drummond, Richland. I mean, all across the state. It's operational things. It's to become ADA compliant. It'll blow your mind when you look at this stuff. It's ADA compliant, really? We're still having schools that have to do things to become ADA compliant. So that's the reality of this, the strangulation that has happened, the cutting off of funding that has happened is really now having the effect of putting it onto the taxpayer once again, paying twice.
Right. And Denise, as far as the funds that go to voucher schools, I think a lot of people would say, well, these are dollars that just follow the kids, and they don't, you know, if their families don't aren't satisfied with their public school, they take that money and go to a private school. But again, real life, the actual statistics don't bear that out as far as, you know, what families are actually benefiting from the shift of money to voucher schools.
Wouldn't that be nice to know, Pat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the challenge, is there's no accountability. And so if you're going to take taxpayer dollars and you're going to give them to private entities, then you better require the same transparency and the same accountability that you require of the public schools. And right now that's not happening. It hasn't ever happened. They don't have to meet the requirements. They don't have to do the testing. They don't have to share their budgets. So there's no guarantee that money's being used in those children's classrooms.
As well, you know, a lot of that voucher money is going to students that have never been in a public school, right?
80%. 80% of the kids who are getting voucher funds have never been in a public school. So they never, ever knew whether that public school would work for them or not. And Pat, I want to respond to something that Jody said, or not even respond, but add to that. And that is the fact that we're hearing community members and taxpayers being fed information that says that our public that public schools haven't been good with their tax dollars. And that is not true. And when you have spent 15 years of not getting a cost of living increase, if that were happening in your own home, you wouldn't be able to replace your roof. You wouldn't be able to, you know, pay for new gutters. You wouldn't be able to put in new plumbing or whatever those big needs were, because you're meeting your day-to-day costs. And when the costs are a higher increment than they have been in the past, meaning unfunded mandates, other issues facing our school districts, their first responsibility is to the children and the families in those school districts. And when you can't meet those needs because you don't have the funds to do so, other things get pushed off and then get in a situation where they have to be replaced, like 90-year-old pipes.
And the impression by the public is only exacerbated by the fact that on most property tax bills, people only see one line of dollars, and they think that their increase is all about the public schools, because it doesn't break it down to say, well, this is how much actually isn't going to the public school. It's going to voucher schools. That bit of transparency is still lacking. Jody, you've got less than a minute left. So I just want to say, as this now becomes an issue in legislative races, what's the single best thing a voter can do if they want to learn more about how to quiz their incumbent or their candidate?
Well, you know, I think to get involved is the most important thing. You know, you can get information at on our Facebook page, Tri-County Influence Campaign, or you can also get information at voteforDems.org. But I think the important thing is to continue to go to your local school board meetings and talk to your school board president and find out exactly what those finances look like and where that money's going.
All right. Jody Perrins and Denise Gomer Hutchison, thank you very much again for helping us continue to let taxpayers know in Wisconsin where their money is actually going and how it could be put to better use. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too, Pat.
Thank you very much, Pat.
When we come back, Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show joins us to tell us about a brand new issue. Well, an update on an old issue, but some brand new news that is not making him happy. That's coming up next. Yes. Barbara Streisand turns 82 today. It was her duet with Robin Gibb, right?
Barry.
Is that Barry Gibb?
Okay. It's Barry.
Sorry. I knew it wasn't Maurice. But
hey!
What?
You don't say Maurice's name with that kind of tone.
I'm just saying, I knew it was one or the other. I had a 50-50 shot.
You had a 1 in 3.
I knew it was one of those two.
You actually had a 1 in 4 if you're going to count all the Gibbs brothers.
Well, Andy was a little busy at the time, you know, being dead. But let's turn to lighter subjects now, shall we? Away from cocaine is bad, kids, to Todd Alba and talking about what's coming up. Todd Alba is good. Mr. Alba, I would normally ask, how are you? But I already know, because when my alarm went off at about 4:25 this morning, it had already been blown up by notifications about today's Todd Alba Show, which some guy named Pat Kreitlow shows up on for the first couple of minutes on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely not the main event for your show today. It has something to do with what you learned about the former UW Center in Richland County. What's happening there, Mr. Alba?
Well, good morning, Pat and Greg. Yeah, a short night, a little salty this morning. was out in beautiful southwest Wisconsin, not too far from the old hometown of Richland Center, about 12 miles south. At the village of Muscadet for a public forum, public, by the way, which is a novel idea to a lot of legislators and people at the UW system. But they were having a public forum. It was hosted by Senator Kelda Royce from Madison, who sits on the university's committee in the state Senate, and also Katrina Shanklin, who sits on the university's committee in the assembly. Of course, Shanklin from the Stevens Point area. And they were there to meet with local folks. It was a packed room. I would say 100-ish people there in a packed room in the village hall to talk about what could be done to help the community of Richland County, which is suffering this closure of their 2-year campus thanks to President Jay Rothman of the UW system. and what could possibly be done there, but also how we can ensure that no more closures happen. We're up to 5 now across the state of Wisconsin. And it was a productive meeting. You know, I give a lot of credit to Senator Royce and Representative Shankland, two of the only legislators or the few legislators on either side of the aisle, I might add, who are actually concerned about this issue in terms of going out into the public and having real discussions and voicing their support for the UW system and public higher education. And as that productive meeting was happening, on my way back into Madison about an hour and a half later, I got an email from our colleague at WRCE, WRCO, our civic media station in Richland Center, news director Joanne Krulatz, who was monitoring her email, and she had gotten the email from the county board chair and administrator there. And while the meeting was happening on what to do to help the Richland community on the closure of the two-year campus, Jay Rothman and his FLAC sent out an email, and the county board released it. And what's happened is the UW system has now decided to pull out entirely from the Richland County community. And I don't have time to get into it. We'll get into it on the show. But they have breached the contract. Anybody knows anything about these two-year campuses? They are a contract between the UW system, i.e. the state of Wisconsin, and the county board. That's why for a long time it was called, you know, the county campuses or whatnot. And so the county owns the building and the land and helps do maintenance. And the state, the system, provides the teachers and the books and also helps with the maintenance. And so severing the agreement, as Jay Rothman did, required some compensation. Rothman points to this $2 million pittance that was passed by the legislature to help communities in which the campus closed. Richland alone sees an economic impact of between $6 and $7 million annually. So this $2 million pittance isn't going to be a supplement for that. Really, all it's intended to do is help close down and probably tear down the buildings at the UW Richland campus. It's malfeasance at the highest level. Republicans are largely responsible for underfunding and ignoring it. But let's not forget the Democrats. Aside from Senator Royce and Representative Shankland and the three other Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee, Democrats have largely also been silent, including our education governor, Tony Evers. And the only way we're going to stop this from happening in Wausau and Rice Lake and Baraboo and the other two-year communities is to raise hell about this with your legislator, both Republican and Democrat, and with the governor, and to call this out.
So here's my question to you then. If we're not going to the one extreme, which is restoring all of the UW classes that used to be held there, and if you don't want the other extreme that apparently presented itself last night with the UW just saying, you know, we're out, we're done, vaya con Dios, what was the realistic alternative that the Richland community was moving toward and that you still thought was attainable?
The Richland community, it's too late to save that campus for educational purposes, of course, but the Richland community has asked time and again for representatives from the UW system and from the governor's office to come out and have a thoughtful discussion and basically agree on a settlement. Is it going to be $4 million? Is it going to be $5 million? Is it going to be $8 million? How can we look and save at least, you know, could this be a cultural center for Southwest Wisconsin? Could it be an alternative education? All kinds of ideas, but that takes money. The Richland County is already in debt, and they don't have the money to redevelop this institution. So, i.e., they were asking for state support and money and other resources. Think of when Uniroyal closed in Eau Claire, other major communities. The state under Tommy Thompson, under I think Jim Doyle as well, had economic response teams that went to these communities. That's been absent in the Richland community. So that's what the Richland campus is asking for. As far as the system goes, how about we go back and look at a former Chancellor Kathy Sandeen's plan to adjust the mission of the 2 years in a realistic fashion, looking at today's environment, but not actually closing these campuses.
You know, I know that we're out of time here to follow this more, so I would strongly urge folks to tune into Todd's show starting just after 12 o'clock here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I would say, I know you'll think this is maybe two apples and oranges, but we've been watching Northland College up in Ashland, and yesterday was supposed to be D-Day, you know, for finding out that they had raised the money or they hadn't and they were going to close their doors. And the statement they put out late last night was, well, we still can't make a decision because we have found a little bit more money basically in the couch cushions. I don't know where it came from. So we're going to talk about this some more. So they are still waiting on any sense of closure. And you mentioned the other campuses that are in, you know, such a state of uncertainty. And that's the toughest part is the uncertainty. Although it sounds like Jay Rothman tried to give you guys absolute certainty in Richland County. So we're going to learn more about that.
Representative Shanklin pointed out last night, we still have over a $3 billion surplus in the state. Don't forget
that. That's true. There is still that surplus. Thank you, Todd. More coming up over the noon hour. Thank you for being part of our show this morning. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.